Please be advised this podcast contains descriptions of graphic violence and it's not appropriate for children.
Well, one of the bravest women I spoke to has actually been in hiding for about 30 years after her father stalked and killed her mother.
Author Victoria Haywood has written books about relationships, food and wine, and true crime. But her book about stalking, Every Move You Make, was born out of a terrifying personal experience.
This is Australian True Crime with Michelle Laurie and Emily Webb. Come with us as we go beyond the news cycle to find out how people become killers, how people become victims, and what happens next.
Before we get to Victoria's personal experience with a stalker, we start this episode with what she's learned about the different types of stalkers.
It's really the fear that you engender in someone else. So if they saw you watch, if they were watching out the window and they saw you drive past numerous times, you could bet that they're going to be feeling pretty uncomfortable.
Is intention key? What if you are doing those things but not intending to make someone uncomfortable?
You're socially awkward and don't know, you know, the cues of people going, you're a creep.
Well, that's pretty much the stalker's key defence. Is that they say, I had no idea that I was making you uncomfortable. And it could be for whatever reason. It could be that they're, as you said, socially inept. But it could be that they're just completely oblivious to how they might be making you feel.
And so fixated, I guess, that they cannot see anything but the object of their affection.
Yeah, and it's not always an object of affection either, which is something that a lot of people don't understand, because you get retaliatory stalkers. So people who are out for revenge, and they're actually deliberately trying to make people feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, my mum had a situation, and this is, would be going back to sort of the late 70s, so she didn't call it stalking. That term didn't really exist in her world anyway, of former partner of a friend of hers. Every time Mum worked at the service desk at Kmart out the front there, front of house, and she said sometimes she would look up and this man would be standing there staring daggers at her, and it might happen. Once a week, once a fortnight. It must have been. She didn't really know why, but she thought maybe he thinks I had something to do with their breakup, or she didn't know. But that would count?
Yeah, absolutely, because that's not a romantic entanglement and it's not someone being deluded that, you know, some celebrity is actually in love with them. You know, that's actually revenge. So, yeah, he would definitely be counted as a stalker. There are five different categories of stalkers. So you've got the retaliatory ones. So that could be an employee who's fired for some reason, who then takes it out on their boss. But I think the one that everyone thinks of most commonly is the rejected suitor. So that if someone has been in a relationship, gets dumped, and then they want to try and get back with the previous person, or they want to get revenge on them. And that's a pretty typical kind of scenario.
That's the, you know, 500 texts in a day kind of.
And there's one I want to say brilliant case that I came across first. I mean, you know, tragic for the person involved. And this was actually in France, and it was a school teacher who'd been in a relationship with a bloke, and they'd renovated a house together. And then she dumped him. And he wanted to be paid back for the cost of the renovation and wanted her to say thank you for all the hard work he'd put into doing the building. And she refused to do it for whatever reason. And he sent 22,000 text messages over the course of 10 months. And I think that works out to be like 175 a day or something like that.
Yeah, you do hear extraordinary. The text carriage service has really upped the ante on stalking, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
And social media. You do hear incredible numbers of messages sent now.
And each, if there's an intervention order, every time someone texts, that's a breach of it. So if you're sending 174 texts a day, this is my understanding, that's like 174 breaches of that.
Of that order.
Or apprehended violence order or...
Indeed. And this guy ended up getting 10 months prison, 6 months of which was, you know, sort of time in lieu. So he only did 4 months for a 10-month campaign of, you know, sheer terror.
Do people... How easy is it to rehabilitate a stalker?
Well, interestingly, I did interview a number of stalkers. I tried to avoid ones in Australia because I didn't want to be,
Yeah.
Didn't want to be on the radar.
Fair enough, yep.
And in fact, you know, I had a very easy way of getting in touch with one particular stalker because I was actually stalked, which is what started my journey. And, you know, it would have been the easiest thing in the world to ring him up and say, hey, you know, why did you do it? But there was no way I wanted to open up that little can of worms again. So I actually put out a call internationally on social media and through friends working as journalists overseas. And it's amazing the people you can dredge up who are happy to talk. Wow. So I talked to quite a famous, a guy who was involved in a famous case called Richard Britton, who's actually English, and we Skyped over a number of weeks. And he talked through his whole experience. And I would say he's now getting psychiatric treatment and on antipsychotic medication and seemed completely normal. And yet you read about what he did to the girl he was obsessed with and you think, you know, there's no way that guy could come back from the position he was in.
What did he do? What's his story?
He was actually, he won one of the quiz shows in the UK, Countdown. So he was sort of a well-known face. And then he was very bright and he was at Oxford, I think it was, and he went on the University Challenge show and he invited a very pretty young undergraduate to join their team. And this is the girl that he became obsessed with. And she started feeling uncomfortable because he'd turn up at her workplace. She was working in a bar and he'd be there every night just staring at her. And so she eventually reported him to the university and to the police. And he could not take no for an answer, so he used to follow her everywhere, write her notes, turned up at her graduation, even though there was an intervention order out against him. But the thing that really got kind of weird was he wrote a 600-page book about her and self-published it.
What about her?
Disturbing.
Yeah, really, really disturbing.
What was it about?
It was about her, their romance.
Oh.
And the fact that she, he saw it as a kind of, he was probably an incompetent suitor as well as a rejected lover. But he saw every refusal that she made, he saw that as, oh, she's just playing hard to get. You know, she's actually thinking it was like a great love story like Romeo and Juliet, you know, you've got to get over obstacles to win your... And that was what the entire book was about. I mean, I have to say I only got through a few pages.
I can't imagine it's very interesting for anyone else.
But he just pursued her with this by writing the book. And then he got the bright idea that to get publicity for the book, he would kidnap her. And they would disappear for a while and then she would fall in love with him while they were camping out in the Scottish countryside, and then he would bring her back to civilization, and you know their love story would go down in history.
Wow. So he was he diagnosed with a specific mental illness, or was it just a sort of psychosis around this woman?
He was put on antipsychotic medication, so I don't know his exact diagnosis. But
And he's recovered.
Yeah, he has recovered. Although it did take, I mean, he did try and kidnap the girl and she screamed.
Wow, it got that far.
Yeah. He turned up in Glasgow complete with camping equipment and whatever and tried to grab her on the street, but she managed to get away. When the book was actually published, some poor woman actually read the whole thing and gave it a one-star review saying this book's useless.
I've had a few one-star reviews. I have. They're real brutal.
Yeah.
But I'll bet you didn't track down the person who gave you the...
Did you do that? The person who gave you the review
did that and attacked her in a supermarket.
He didn't.
Yep, got her, picked up a bottle of something, glass bottle, and hit her around the head.
Oh, my gosh.
So he was actually awaiting trial for that when I was interviewing him.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Yes. Can you talk about your experience with stalking, or would you rather not?
Oh, well, no, it's well and truly in the past, but it was one of those bizarre things where I always thought, you know, you had to be young and pretty or a celebrity.
Famous, yeah.
Famous to be stalked, not sort of a fat middle-aged mother. But I was just at my local coffee shop where I go every morning after I walk my then dog, a Kelpie, gorgeous Kelpie. and got chatting to a little old man at the table next door to me. Looked like a farmer down from the country, you know, sort of moleskins, RMs, you know, blue-collared shirt, beautifully spoken. Mm. Got chatting to him, and he happened to mention that he was looking for a writer for a website for his company. And it happened to be about a bizarre bit of technology that I knew something about. So I said, actually, I know about that.
And I'm a writer.
And I'm a writer. Mm. And so we exchanged phone numbers and organised to meet up so that he could brief me properly on it. And so we met up the next day and he briefed me on the website he wanted written. And then, of course, being a good journalist or writer, I went home and started doing a little bit of research into his company and the technology to discover it was completely fictitious.
No.
He'd made up the whole thing.
Had he targeted you specifically?
I think no. No, as it turns out, not. Because I looked into it further and he claimed that he'd been interviewed on Landline about his work. Unfortunately for him, my ex-husband worked for Landline. So he was able to check the archives, and so I knew this guy was completely, you know, making it all up. But he'd obviously obsessively watched one feature on Landline about this technology because he was completely word perfect in what it was all about. And LinkedIn, I then reached out on LinkedIn and found friends of friends who'd been suckered by the same guy.
Oh, wow.
With the same story. And he'd then, when they'd caught him out lying, he'd started stalking them as well. So he rang up and said, where's my website copy? And I said, well, you don't seem to be who you claim to be. And basically said, don't want to have any contact with you. And then he started. He rang incessantly, leaving obscene messages on the phone. He emailed. He sent letters purporting to be from a lawyer saying that I was damaging his reputation. And it went on for about 6 weeks. But he was a bit silly because he left all the messages on the phone. So I was able to go march up to the police station and say, have a listen to this.
And what was their attitude?
Well, I was actually very pleasantly surprised. They, A, took it seriously.
Right.
B, said take out an intervention order straight away. And they logged every report I made. So I felt quite safe, and I had a number to call, you know, if I was scared at home. But my son was actually quite young at that stage, so I had to tell him, do not answer the front door. This is what you need to look out for, like a little old man with a walking stick.
God, how bizarre. Oh, jeez.
But the really weird thing about it was that, the awful thing about it was that we lived two doors down from an old people's home. So, of course, I'd be sitting in the study and I'd hear tap, a walking stick going down the footpath, like probably five times a day, and every time my heart would just be in my mouth and I'd be thinking it's him. And I did find him at the end of my street one day, which is when I went straight up to the police station and said, he knows where I live. This has got to stop. So at that stage they said, okay, I think it's time we nailed his head to the floor for you. And I was going, ooh, could I be there and watch up, please?
Yeah.
But in fact what they did, they just rang him up because obviously I had his phone number and said, any more contact and you'll be back in prison. And, of course, I'm going,
back in prison?
And it turns out he had a really long history of doing this.
Of stalking women?
Stalking women and men.
Wow.
Indiscriminate.
And where was he from? Like,
what do you know?
Was he in the neighbourhood or?
Not close by, no. He obviously travelled to pick up new victims.
Oh, my God.
So I knew there was someone out in Mitcham who'd been targeted by him, someone in Richmond, and then I was, you know, elsewhere, but yes. Yeah.
Did it stop then as a result of the police?
Yeah, so that phone call stopped it dead in its tracks. But, of course, about a year later I thought, I wonder whether he's hit the papers for anything. Because when I first asked the police about him, they said no history of violence, and that kind of cheered me up a bit.
Yeah.
But then about a year after it had finished, I idly Googled his name, and sure enough he came up in a newspaper report as having stabbed someone.
No.
So...
How long ago was this now?
This would be about 3 years ago.
That's not long enough.
No, indeed.
Oh, my gosh. So your reaction as a writer? was to, did you want to sort of arm yourself with more knowledge about stalking? Is that why you wrote the book?
Partly because I'd already done so much research. Mm. Like, yeah, what are my options? What do I do?
Yeah.
And I was actually on deadline to deliver my previous book, which was about intimate partner homicide. Mm. And I rang the publisher and said, look, I might be a bit late meeting deadline because I'm spending so much time at the police station. And they very kindly said, actually, don't worry about it. You know, that's your next book.
Yeah.
And in fact, it was fantastic because, you know, chapter one was all my personal experience and all the background reading I'd been doing fed into the rest of the book.
Well, actually, this brings me back then to the five kinds of stalking, because this isn't either of those. This isn't the ones that you've spoken about already, relationship or rejected suitor. So what sort of stalker is this guy, your guy?
I'd put him in the category of retaliation.
Retaliation, sorry. That's
so
the first
I caught
one,
him
yes.
out lying and he was retaliating. Because until I actually accused him of lying, he was, you know, fine.
So what are the other three kinds of stalking then?
You've got your incompetent suitor, so someone who doesn't read the messages.
Yeah. Okay.
Correctly, they you know, might think someone's interested in them when in fact that person is just being polite.
Yeah, like smiling as you walk past.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what scares me. When I walk past people, I often go, hello.
Same.
And then I've read stuff, your book, I'm like, I could just give someone the impetus to stalk me from that. Just because I'm being, you know, Catholic schoolgirl, nice girl.
Yeah, yeah.
Good morning, hello.
Who else?
And the rejected lover we've talked about. Yeah. Probably the intimacy seeker is the other one, which is kind of a bit like the incompetent suitor, but it's someone that tends to be someone who targets celebrities, so they might not even know that person, and yet they'll think that they have a relationship and it'll be all in their head, so which is, you know, quite tragic, really. So it could be someone who's fixated on a member of the royal family or someone who appears on TV. And there have actually been some really interesting studies done overseas. Like in the Netherlands, I think one study they said was a third of people in the public eye have stalkers.
Mm.
And there was another even worse study in Germany, which said that I think it was 75% of people on TV will have a stalker, at least one stalker, at some point in time.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
I mean, if we're talking these huge percentages of stalkers, let's say, how many are actively dangerous, do you think? Are there any studies into that? What do stalkers mostly want from their victims?
Either recognition or a relationship.
Right.
Or revenge. But the final category of stalker, which we haven't really talked about, is the one that everyone's worst nightmare, which is the predatory stalker.
You will, yeah.
And they're the ones that you don't... Well, absolutely. I changed my routines, no longer went to the coffee shop, changed the way I drove to the station. You know, everything changed, went to different shops.
Would you have a chat with a rando at the coffee shop ever again?
Well, that was one of... People get quite judgmental about if you're the victim of stalking.
Right. So I chat to randos all the time, yeah. so I just wonder if it would make you stop.
But I had a lot of people actually say, well, they'll teach you to talk to strangers in a coffee shop. Yeah, like quite judgmental. And I thought, actually, no, I'm not going to chat. And I very deliberately thought, no, I'm not going to change being open to strangers just because of one nutcase out there.
Yeah. And you, it absolutely beyond your control what happened. There was... you know, absolutely no, it's victim blaming, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So, yes, one ex-friend.
yeah, really?
Because very, very, like, what would you change about how you behaved, you know, in the future?
Nothing.
And I thought, actually, nothing.
No, there's really one person who's at fault here.
Yes, and that's
your man, your stalker, not you.
But people also find it quite confronting being told details of what's happening.
What do you mean?
With evidence of, you know, emails and stuff like that, people saying, I don't want to look at it, you know, because they found it too confronting to actually see, like, someone's complete madness down on paper.
Really?
Yeah. And obviously you have to keep evidence, and that's, you know, a bit of advice for anyone who's being stalked is keep every single bit of evidence you can, keep a logbook, make sure that, you know, you do not... chuck things out just to get them out of the house.
Yeah. Mm. Who else did you talk to in your research? It's so fascinating that you got to speak to a stalker. I mean, when you spoke to him, Richard Britton, what were his memories of the time? Did he remember feeling out of control at the time, or did he feel like it was completely reasonable, his behaviour?
He thought it was completely reasonable. He said, you know, in hindsight, he can recognise that he wasn't sleeping, he wasn't eating properly, he was probably psychotic. And he said, you know, I would have incredible energy. I'd write, you know, pages and pages every day of the book. So he was completely manic. And frankly, anyone who can churn out a 600-page book, you know, mine are generally about 200. So I'm you know, impressed.
Yes. That's a lot of effort.
Yeah. So he could recognise it, but only with hindsight. But at the time, he said everything fitted together logically. He thought this idea of kidnapping her for a publicity stunt was really clever. Yeah, who knows?
So, yeah, who else did you speak to?
I spoke to a really interesting woman in the States, and that's a story that has been made headlines across the States because the daughter was found dead in her bedroom with a suspected drug overdose, and, you know, young girl at college. But they had made 400 reports, I think, to the local police of stalker activity. They'd installed cameras around the house. They'd had, you know, windows alarmed and stuff like that. And yet this young girl was still found dead for no apparent reason. And the mother is convinced that somehow the stalker got into the house and actually murdered the daughter.
Wow. So she's not been able to convince police of that?
No. So the police responded to 400 calls.
So they get that she did have a stalker, but they don't believe that he's involved in the death.
No, they can't work out how on earth he could have got into the house. But the mother actually went one step further and accused two of her daughters, they were the same age. They weren't particularly close friends, but accused them of having murdered the daughter. So ended up on Dr. Phil with the mother, the parents of the murdered girl, and the two accused. So it was quite a, you know, famous case over there.
So were the accused girls connected to the stalking? Or we don't know who the stalker was?
No one knows for sure who the stalker was.
Right.
The mother is convinced that it was a boy and a girl.
Oh, I see.
Who knew her vaguely just from being in the same neighbourhood. And she's convinced it was them. But they claim, you know, absolutely not.
What's the victim's name?
Morgan Ingram.
And we'll hear some audio from that Dr. Phil episode after this short break. Coming up on Australian True Crime, we hear about some software favoured by stalkers. But first, American woman Toni Ingram, who spoke at length with Victoria Haywood for her book Every Move You Make about the alleged stalking and murder of her daughter Morgan. She also appeared alongside the young woman she accuses of the stalking and the murder on the Dr. Phil show.
Is it possible that she accidentally overdosed?
No. You know how many drugs were in her body? There were drugs that we never had in our house. She could have gone into our cabinet anytime and taken out sleeping pills and killed herself. Mm-hmm. There were no drugs, there were no pills, no remnants of pills in her stomach. Mm-hmm. So it was liquid form, and it was things that she never, ever had.
But your daughter did have some interaction with recreational drugs, correct?
Some interaction with recreational drugs.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea. She was helping people get off drugs. So I don't know what you mean by that. She was never on antidepressants for depression. She was on a prescription years ago that she went off 2 years ago, 2 years before, and it was a super low dose and it was for headaches. Had nothing to do with
what
depression.
Was it
amitriptyline.
And what did she overdose on?
She overdosed on amitriptyline, but no pills. And the dose was so high, they had to find pills. And I just found out, I didn't even know, I have a horse. Morgan had a horse. I didn't even know they have liquid and transdermal amitriptyline for horses.
Right. Do you work with horses?
I used to when I was younger, a lot younger.
Mm-hmm. Do you now?
No.
Mm-hmm. Do you?
No. Mm-hmm.
Does your mom still work at the ranch?
No.
When did she stop working at the ranch?
Last summer or spring.
Mm-hmm. So 6 months after Morgan died?
I would say, yeah.
And the ranch was right behind our house.
We've been talking about them like they're not here, but they are here. Mm-hmm. 18-year-old Brooke and her dad, Jim, are here. These people believe, and I think sincerely and to the core of their soul, that you have been directly involved in the murder of their daughter. What do you say?
I say, where's the proof?
Did you have any reason to kill this girl?
I don't see why I would have, no.
Did you stalk her in any way? Did you harass her? Did you ring and run? Did you tap on her window? Did you terrorize her, scare her, bug her in any way?
I did not.
And Tony has set up a website, and she kept a diary throughout the stalking of every instant. And that's now up online, and you can read that.
Yep, morganingram.com. I'm just having a look at it now. Wow, that's intense. This happened in 2011. And her mum is still...
Yep, yep.
Still pushing for some kind of... Well, she still believes that these two kids that her daughter went to school
absolutely.
With were the stalkers and killed her. What sort of stalking activity was going on?
They'd be tapping on the window, and there were odd things that happened around the house, like some guttering and come away, and they thought for a while that someone had been on the roof of the house. But they did actually, they had one of the deer cameras that they have in the States for tracking wildlife.
Right.
And the only evidence of a person was one night on the deer camera, there was a figure standing at the front door. But they had, you know, the front doorbell ringing at odd hours of the day and night. They seemed to have someone who had knowledge of when she was actually there and when she wasn't, because it never happened when she wasn't there.
Oh, it's almost like Santa. I'm thinking of the Amityville Horror or something when I'm listening to that, you know. The
disturbing story, isn't it?
But just the impact on the family as well. And because they were from a small town. And when they accused the two youngsters in town of being behind the stalking and the murder, they actually, you know, there was a lot of outcry about it, and they actually had to move because they were essentially being hounded by the locals and by the press, who were very keen on the story as well.
God. Oh, sorry, it's just unbelievable.
I think it's a really difficult topic to think about because I guess there's no specific kind of victimology with a stalking victim, is there? It's not like, right, you will become a stalking victim, but not you. It could be anyone.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Yes.
Man, woman, child, you know, anything.
And I think one of the things, one of the facts that really shocked me when I was researching it was that 97% of domestic violence victims, if they leave the relationship, they will be stalked by an ex-partner.
Yeah.
Which kind of makes sense if you think about it, because if someone's really controlling and wants that power over their partner, if the partner says, enough, I'm out of here, they will want to reassert that control.
Yeah.
And generally that would be through stalking.
God, that's terrifying, isn't
it? And technology is just making it so darn easy to stalk people too.
What are some of the ways that technology does make it easy to stalk people?
Oh, there are. I don't really want to say the names of the programs.
No, but
want to give them any publicity. Yeah.
But certainly, like recently, I remember I read somewhere and there was a link to software that helped you see how much information you've given away in your social media profiles.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
that's
interesting. It went through and it said, okay, well, you've inadvertently let people know sort of pretty closely where you live, what you do for work, what your children's names are, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, more worryingly from a victim's point of view is that someone can actually put software on your phone that shows them not only where you are at any given moment, so if you go to the police station, if you go to a refuge or something, they'll know exactly where you are. They can pinpoint you. But can also log every keystroke you make. So every text you send, every email, every website you look at, they can see exactly what you're doing.
Do they have to have access to my phone to do that? Or is there
they would have to, which is why it's generally someone who's...
But certainly a former partner could.
Yes,
have access, or a person who thinks they're about to become a former partner has access to your phone lying around. And
yeah. So that case of, I don't know whether you remember the case of Lisa Harnham in Sydney?
Yeah.
Who was chucked off the 15th floor balcony of her apartment by her partner, Simon
Gattani.
That's right. So he actually had that software installed on her phone, and that's what alerted him to the fact that she was going to leave him, because she had emailed her mother and said, "That's it, I've had enough. I want to come home to Canada."
So effectively, he was stalking her even though they were still living in the same apartment at that stage, because he was accessing her private email and text.
He'd also installed cameras throughout the apartment so that he could see what she was up to when he wasn't there.
And, of course, they captured some horrific footage before she died. Wow. Gosh, this is so complicated and complex, isn't it?
And so horrifying too.
Horrifying.
I had a lot of sleepless nights when I was researching the book.
Yeah. Do you think a person who thinks of themselves as normal, like as I'm sitting here now and horrified and, oh, gosh, what's wrong with people, could I become a stalker if I had a love affair go wrong, or, you know, can people who were formerly pretty rational people be triggered into this behaviour, do you think?
I think they can, depending on the depth of the emotional distress.
Yeah, okay.
I'd like to think that everyone's got close friends who say, enough, you know, you need to leave it alone.
Yes.
Or that your own common sense would, you know. But I think some people do become so mentally distressed and ill that they tip into it.
Yeah, tip into this kind of behaviour. Because I sort of feel like it's one of those things where, you know, we shouldn't have an image in our mind of who a stalker is and what they would look like because it could potentially be anyone.
Yes, yes. Well, one of the bravest women I spoke to has actually been in hiding for about 30 years after her father stalked and killed her mother. The mother had left, you know, had been a victim of domestic violence for a long time, eventually got the courage to leave and was living in a caravan somewhere with the children, and the father started stalking, the estranged husband started stalking, and she made complaints to the police and so on. And then one night he actually broke in and stabbed her, you know, numerous times, but she was found before she was actually dead. So she made what's called a dying declaration to say, my ex-husband did this to me. And generally that would stand up in court. But the judge at the time, and remember this is 30 years ago, the judge at the time said, no, you directed the jury to let the father go, saying she only believed it was him because he'd been stalking her.
Oh, my God.
You know, it could have been anyone, so you have to discount the fact that she said he did it.
Wow.
So the father was actually released, but because the children had given evidence against him, he started stalking them.
Oh.
Can you imagine how horrifying that would be, your father, to have grown up in an environment of such extreme violence, but then and then to have your mother killed, and then your father to say, you know, how dare you speak up against me?
Well, I mean, and, you know, we're fortunate in that the world has moved on and we take stalking seriously. But also, how much can the police do if I go to them and say I'm being stalked and they say, as they did to you, take out your intervention order and all that stuff and we'll phone him and tell him to stop? What if he doesn't? What it feels like, really, we wait until he actually commits a crime before we can do anything about it.
Yeah, well, stalking itself is a crime.
Okay.
So if you break the intervention order, but the danger is when someone escalates their behaviour, because there was that awful case, I can't remember the girl's name, the woman's name, in Bacchus Marsh.
So many women. I mean, so many women are stalked by exes, tell the police, they're doing everything they're told to do, they're keeping the evidence, all that stuff, but one night he still comes and breaks in and stabs them.
Yes, yeah. I think there's not much you can do about that. Unless you actually take the decision to completely disappear, as the girl, the daughter did in this case.
Yeah.
So she changed her name, she changed states, she completely left her old life behind.
Oh, I can't imagine she would have much faith left in the judicial system or in anything after that happened
No, indeed. Oh, and so when I spoke to her, you know, obviously had to be very careful. You know, pseudonyms were used. Mm. You know, there were different phone. It was like a James Bond movie, you know, the way we actually were able to talk to each other.
So what advice would you give people listening, like, what are some early signs of stalking even that perhaps some people don't take seriously themselves even? At what point do we go, okay, this is not cool?
I think you have to absolutely follow your instincts. So if the hairs on the back of your neck go up when someone gives you a smile every day when you order your coffee, or if they try and presume a little bit further than, you know, you feel comfortable with, I'd follow your gut instinct then. But I think the important thing to do is if it becomes overt and if you can't remove yourself from the situation, you have to say, make it very clear, and you have to be very forthright in saying, this makes me feel uncomfortable, I do not want any further contact, and you have to spell it out. And it can be as brutal as you need to be.
It's such a good point because, again, we don't like doing that, do we? And certainly women don't like saying to a person, you're making me feel uncomfortable and I don't want to be in contact with you.
Yes, because if it is innocent, of course they're going to back off.
Of course. And but you need that really clear demarcation moment, don't you, where you say, today I'm telling you I don't want any more contact from you. So anything from here on has crossed the line.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. 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 And it's not a matter of being impolite. I think you've just got to be firm and actually make it as when I spoke to the guy on my stalker on the phone, I said, I do not want any further contact with you. And then, of course, when he started sending obscene emails, you know, that made it very clear that he was, you know, did not have good intent. So.
No, or understanding of reasonable behaviour.
Yes, yeah. So I think stating your position is, you know, step number one.
Okay.
Step number two is collecting evidence. Yep. Step number three, reporting it to the police and also looking for other online resources as well, because there's a lot out there for victims of domestic violence and so on.
Yeah.
And they even have their own apps and so on, and they'll be able to advise on what you need to do to protect yourself from cyberstalking too.
Thank you for downloading this episode of Australian True Crime. Victoria's book is called Every Move You Make, and it's available now. Please take a moment to leave us a favourable review wherever you get your podcasts, to help other people find us.